All right, welcome back. Post show episode 139. It's been a minute. Thank you for your patience. We have returned. We're coming in hot with a Oscars reaction. We talk about the Oscar movies that we've seen. We've been covering kind of, Oscar movies as we watch them over the last several episodes. But today we talk about obviously who won what award. We go through that relatively quickly. We do some of the movies we haven't seen. Anora, Conclave, Wicked, Nickel Boys. Grant's got a bonus flick called Kneecap. We tee up a little bit of Dragon Ball Daima promo for next week's episode or next episode 140 of the post show. We'll talk about that. We catch up on Solo Leveling, which is some unbelievable shit airing right now. White Lotus season 3 and Severance season 2, episodes specified in the description. We're happy to be back. We hope you're happy to have us. Looking forward to it. Grant, hit him with that music.
Oh, hey there, Grant.
Hello, David.
What's up, buddy?
Well, just get back in the groove of the pod. Feels normal. Feels like putting on a warm sweater.
Yes, and 3 days later, we have risen. No, it's been a little more than 3 days. We had, I don't know why we delayed, but I presume it was life stuff on one of our parts.
Oh, it was the critical food poisoning.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. How
yeah.
are you feeling?
Better now. Honestly, Dave, I won't get into the details.
No, please do.
But it took about 5 days post all the retching where I could have a meal. I went like 5 days with like just water and
nice.
a couple crackers here and there.
Nice.
It was pretty bad. Kryn got it too. It was not nice.
That's
it was,
tough. Yeah. I was going to say, we'll call it a water fast. Some people get creative.
Yeah, I felt pretty thin.
That's tough, eh?
Yeah. But yeah, no, so there was that. And then I think you're doing some world traveling and...
Yeah.
And whatnot. But here we are, back at it, fresh.
Back fresher. At it again with the white vans. Yeah. I did a little bit of travel. Seeing these fine, not so united states that we're currently in a trade war with. I was going to say, we're not going to talk about that. Cause you're probably listening to this trying to escape all that. To be fair, recording this is a way for both of us to escape all that. Though I will note, Grant, this round of the current like season of America,
sure,
it's even harder to get away from the news than the first time, or than a couple of terms ago. It's crazy.
So specifically being targeted and. Step two, as
yeah.
you would say. But
it's a weird time. Fortunately, there's a lot to distract us. Lots of unbelievable live-action drama on TV right now. The Oscars were recorded. Not recorded. The Oscars aired.
The Oscars. Holy cow. Did you also think it was this coming Sunday?
I lost track of time. I'll be honest. Between like work grind mode and then vacation brain, I went about 5 days not knowing what day it was. And you know what? Not a bad way to be. I'll tell you that.
Break is good sometimes,
but yes, it did. The Oscars did sneak up on me, that's for sure. And I was truly bummed that I didn't get to see a couple of the movies, because the vacation and everything crept up on me. We were making good progress. Like I've got like three or four to talk to you about here, but a couple of critical ones I just missed. Maybe you'll cover those bases, but
I don't think so. I think we line up on a couple of things. But
well, what do you want to do? Do you want to start with Oscar flicks, or do you want to do TV?
Sure. Let's do Oscar flicks. It was right on top there. How did you watch the broadcast?
I did.
Down 7% this year.
7%?
Yeah, viewership is down 7%.
Down. Who hosted last year? Do you know?
It wasn't John Mulaney, was it?
No, they want him. I think.
Or was it Kimmel? Did Kimmel do it again?
Might have been Kimmel. I don't know, but definitely not Mulaney.
Conan killed it.
Conan killed it.
He's my guy. I've always been a Conan fan. And just to see him up there, like, kind of just perfectly fit into, like he's just, like, so, like, amorphous. Like, he can take that character and that shtick, and it fits in just about any setting. I love it.
It's funny. He brought his late-night comedy style to...
Just silliness, yeah.
To his absurdly dorky bits. Like, he brought that to the Oscars. And I thought it was fucking awesome,
it was
honestly.
Perfect. Yeah.
It's so funny because... like we're in this weird kind of funk with awards shows, right? Emmys, Globes, etc. Like it's just interesting to see what works and what doesn't. And like the standout this year has, or in this last cycle was like Nikki Glaser, right? At the,
at the Globes, and she's like very much like new talent, like new modern. She has all like this, you know, this intense stand-up culture and fan base behind her, but she's also like mainstream enough that she kind of ticks both boxes.
Yep.
Conan's the opposite of that. He's like one of the almost old Hollywood,
the old guard guys. Or like the previous generation of the guard. Yeah,
but both of them succeeded in completely different ways. Like Conan did a whole like his ridiculous song and dance about I won't waste time. I don't know, I'm a sucker for it though. I really like, you, I love his sense of humor.
Yeah, it's the perfect balance of like self-deprecation and also like not the, it just, he's just so whip smart and like can kind of crack those jokes at everybody, but he's just as quick to like hit it himself with it and kind of, you know, play on all that. And it just feels even keeled, you know, like it feels like he can target people. And he gets away. The whole bit with like getting the firefighters to make the jokes for him that he can't say, I thought was incredible. The halftime Kendrick Lamar joke literally made me spit my beer out.
Love that.
And Leanna was like, are you okay? I was like coughing downstairs. But that was pretty good. Him coming out of Demi Moore's substance cavity, I thought was just spot on, Conan. I love that.
If you're not like a huge Conan fan and not super familiar with his work, like watch about how far this guy will go for the bit. Like the opening of the Oscars is a good example. The substance callback you just mentioned, but like watch his Hot Ones appearance. That guy doesn't care. Like he'll do anything for the laugh, which is like just what comedy is. Mm-hmm. Granted, it's in like his very specific kind of almost like dad dork humor, but like he doesn't care. Like he doesn't care at all.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, he's almost more of an entertainer than anything, right?
Yeah. Well, just like, he's, you know, like you get someone who's been doing monologues, nightly monologues for like 40 years. That's, and to, you know, Kimmel's credit too. Like, I know some people didn't love his years or whatever, but I thought you just get someone who knows how to like sit in front of a camera, read the prompter, and get the information relayed to people is like such a huge, like, it's like the biggest crux, like, for this kind of gig, right? So, like, just having that kind of personality and comedy aside, if you can get someone who knows how to read and project and present, you're set.
Roll with punches, be able to handle like stuff that happens that is not planned because something always happens. Yeah. Okay, so that's the host. Maybe we'll talk. Let's talk about the biggest one of the night, just to start off, because I saw this movie. It's my favorite of the Oscar movies that I've seen. Anora.
That's the one I really wanted to check out. Did not get a chance.
So okay, I won't call it a sweep, but Sean Baker,
he took a sweep.
Took four Oscars in one night. And I didn't know this, Grant. Here's some fucking crazy trivia for you. So he's a writer director and he won for writing and directing.
Yep.
He edited his own film as well.
Mm-hmm.
And won the Oscar for that.
Mm-hmm.
And I was trying to think, like, you know, I know most of the no, that's not true. I know the big writer directors. You know, we've got Tarantino, Nolan,
Paul Thomas Anderson.
He writes
all his stuff. Yeah.
I don't know if any of them edit their own movies.
I feel like, notably, I think David Lynch was known to edit a lot of his stuff.
Very,
but he also didn't get a ton of like.
Yeah,
he was like a Hollywood favorite and like in our tours. You know.
Yeah.
Favorite, but I don't think he got a lot of Oscar love.
I also think they're going to introduce an Oscar, I think, apparently next year for casting.
I did hear that. That's interesting.
And Sean Baker cast the movie himself.
Mm-hmm.
Just wild, this guy. And I don't know about you, but go watch Anora, and we'll talk about it when you do. But I looked at his IMDb. Like, the only other thing that was notable was in 2021, he did something called Red Rocket. Do you know what that is?
I didn't see it. I saw that his previous movie, the Florida Project, that was really good.
Okay. I've seen none of his work, nor have I heard of it, really. So, like, Anora was, like, my, like, introduction to him, as I'm sure it was for a lot of people. And then, obviously, we haven't said it, but for the record, they won Best Picture.
Yep.
So, yeah, really big night for Anora. And, yeah, my favorite film. And, yeah, like, it's very R-rated. And has a lot of, God, I don't know. I'm trying to think of like something that isn't super obvious. Yes, it's like a movie about sex, but dude, what blows my mind is like the almost the chaotic fun energy the movie has. I didn't anticipate that. at all. Yeah, like,
well, I think it's a recurring theme. Like, he has, like, the theme crossing all his movies is, like, the topic of sex work is, like, a returning, as a big thing. Like, it's been a big thing for him and all that, and in his storytelling and all that. But, so, yeah, well, hard work, put it in. It's funny, too. There was a clip kind of going around from, just making the round. I think it was big a couple years ago, but it was when he was making the Florida Project. And he was telling the story of, or the people relaying the story is he had two child actors. They're, like, the leads in the movie.
Yeah.
For a certain period of time. And there's a shot where he gets them looking at a rainbow in the background. And that, like, there's just this whole clip of, like, an indie director, like, just, like, the elation he has of, like, we just saved $10,000 on this movie. Right. By just perfect timing, having, like, these kids seeing, like, just genuine joy, perfect timing of the weather. And it just goes to show, like, you know, the... such a small win like that can do so much for a movie, and to see someone like this winning like that, and just like his compassion, or just, you know, like his love, and his whole speech during the directing portion where he just didn't think anybody got right into theaters and like see things, like, introduce movies at a young age, like, it was just very powerful stuff. It's the stuff you want to see at the Oscars.
That dude batted 1,000 in his speeches. Every speech was good.
Yeah,
and it's great to have such strong speeches on the same broadcast as such horrid speeches like Adrian Brody to close out the night.
Wow, I muted it. I was just like, this. It just kept going and going and going.
He set the record, longest Oscar speech in history.
Really?
Yeah, he shushed the fucking music.
That was wild. It went off immediately, though. I gotta say, I was like, wow, good on.
I actually, I want to be very clear. In the moment, I was like, that's a fucking power move.
Yeah, and then he went for another 4 minutes, you know, which is like less of a power move.
This is the thing, is that if he did that and that said some profound shit, I would have been like, okay, you gotta give it to the kid.
Yeah.
And especially, like, you know, he was defending his Oscar that if had Chalamet won, it would have been, you know, he would have lost the record for youngest guy to win to Chalamet.
Oh my God.
So he kind of defended his throne and then got a second Oscar. Like, pretty gangster shit. But it's just funny because I feel like, I mean, at least the story of his win is going to be like, you fucking went for 5 minutes and somehow said nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Be nicer. Like, I haven't seen The Brutalist. Hopefully you have, but...
I have not.
Okay, well, we'll come back to it, but... Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, pretty funny. Okay, what about you, Oscar movie?
I was able to get two in over the past few days. I saw Conclave. You had seen that. Like, Ralph Fiennes is just, like, he's, like, in my top five. He's, like, one of my guys. Like, no matter what he does, I'm just in.
Yo, did you catch, real quick, did you catch Conan's joke about his name? Like, I think Ralph Fiennes is nominated for the fourth time tonight. And if he, despite no wins, if he loses again tonight, he must succumb. And we all call him Ralph going forward.
Oh, my God.
Because isn't his name spelt Ralph?
I think so, yeah.
That's pretty funny. But anyway, keep going.
But, no, so, like, just, you know, like, I was gonna love this movie no matter what, just because he, like, crushes everything that he's in. Like, you know, he just has such, you know, it's so weird, but, like, you see some actors, like, just the genuine weight, you know, that they bring to a screen and performance. It's just, he could be, you know, singing about the most, or talking about the most frivolous things, and you're, like, drawn, I'm just drawn in by him. But, Conclave was good. I was definitely gonna, I don't think, it's because the movie I had watched previous was so high energy and kind of high octane, doing like a double bill of that movie, which I would like to talk about later, and Conclave, it was just not a good matching, and I was like, oh, this is like really slow, and you know, I love a slow movie, like I don't mind like the draw, like the slow draw, but it was just kind of like, let's get it going, and just all these like random shots cutting to Monica Bellucci of like just staring. I was like, I found it so surprising that she got like a conversation point of like, why was she getting supported for best supporting actress when like she had like a 2-minute scene, like a big monologue or whatever, but like she was just kind of floating around the whole movie.
Yeah, that one didn't make a lot of sense to me, her nomination.
Yeah, but I did like it. Like, it was John Lithgow, also one of my favorites.
Just, Stanley Tucci. Yeah. I forgot he could do that.
Yeah. I thought there was something wrong with my audio. I honestly, when he had talked, thought there was something wrong with my headphones. He had like a, it was like he was acting with like a candy in his mouth or something. There was like a weird, something to his, it almost sounded like it was done like AD, like after the fact.
I didn't pick up on that.
No, it felt like he was talking with something in his mouth the entire time. And there's just such a, I was just like, oh, that's weird. I hear it again. Like, why is it just when anytime Stanley Tucci talks?
I will note.
Or talking through his teeth or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I will note on the Tucci thing, like, it's funny because this will probably come up again later. Listening to him talk, like, he looked like he was convincing because he was in the, you know, the costume does so much.
Sure. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know if they won for costume or not. I can't remember.
No, Wicked did, I think.
Yeah, it's true. That makes sense. But he is very much like his character. Like, he kind of was just playing the straight man, for the lack of a better term. Like, he was just kind of... It was interesting listening to him, because that wasn't like a super layered performance the way Rafe was. Lithgow did a great job, I thought. Yeah, I don't know. Very dark movie, like yeah. Tonally
dark, yeah.
And the way it's shot, it's all interiors, covered up windows. Like, with a few like wild like bird's eye shots.
There was probably, again, like anything I've seen like this year so far, you know, it's only like two or 3 months in now, but like the first time you see them in the auditorium and it's all dark around, and like the blue of the seats, there's just one light on that and they're kind of like all scattered. I was like, man, they can come back to this shot in 20 minutes and I would love it just as much. And then they come back to that venue again from the previous or reverse angle.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, it's such a beautiful shot. Everyone's talking about the scene with the umbrellas as like the best shot in the movie, but
it's a very pretty shot.
The movie theater was just like, it was just like a beacon. I was like, this is so beautiful.
Yeah, really beautiful movie. Like the way it's shot, and like I agree with everything you said about Rafe. Like, he just brings like a, forgive the word, like, but like a majesty to stuff he does. I think it's funny. I'm somewhat critical of the Harry Potter movies, but like,
you?
No. Yeah. Sorry. But, you know, because Voldemort, I think it's just hard to do, perform really well in the way that those movies and the way they were made. But every time I think about Ralph Fiennes, I don't think about Voldemort. I think about how fucking good he was in James Bond.
When they
bring him in around the Skyfall period, I remember being like, oh, this is sick. Like, he's an asshole. But later, you kind of know.
But for duty. He's an asshole, you know, to perform his duty.
And he gets his hands dirty in that movie, and then the way it all ends up, I forgot to...
It's the Grand Budapest Hotel. Like, he is Gustav, like, to, like, a T. Like, he is that character. I love it.
I keep, you know, just, like, on my ASMR algorithm, I've watched it several times. I haven't actually seen the movie, but it's a movie with him and Anya Taylor-Joy, and he makes her a hamburger.
The menu.
Is that like a horror or
no, it's like thriller? It's like an eat the rich thriller kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah.
It's good. I liked it.
That scene at least is amazing.
Yeah.
But I wonder if it spoils the movie. Anyway.
Probably.
Yeah. All right. So that's Anora and Conclave, the last one I saw. We finally saw Wicked.
How'd you like it?
Great movie. Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah. Like, you know, it's similar to the Chalamet movie, right? I have all this resistance because just on its face, I just don't have interest. And then I'll watch it and be like, yeah, this is awesome. Like, obvious. So, yeah, I didn't think I would watch Wicked and then be like, you know what? I don't think it's that good. Like, I never thought it'd be that. I just wasn't, excited
what
to
a
watch
take,
it.
Dave.
Yeah, right.
You don't, I'm just, yeah.
But
straight
no,
white male doesn't like Wicked.
No, but obviously, it's a good movie. It's incredibly
good. It was good.
Okay, a lot shocked me. Okay, shock is probably a strong word, but like, I was super impressed by Ariana Grande's acting and her on-screen comedy. Like, she, it shouldn't be that surprising. She's been on SNL. She has the chops.
She's been an acting child star. You know, she did comedy on Nickelodeon. She did comedy with Disney. Like, this is her wheelhouse. Like, I don't know why anyone like ever doubted like her crushing this. So
very funny. Earned an Oscar nom. They opened the entire Oscars with their duet.
I did miss the opening. I had to watch that back.
They did Defying Gravity live, and they and annihilated.
Of course.
Cynthia Erivo, fantastic. I thought, and it almost had kind of like a almost, you know, like Marvel movies these days.
The film grain or like
the filmy graininess, is like the sheen of the CG is like almost like a gloss, and you're like, I don't like, there's actually so much CG, it might actually be taking away from the real sets they built at times.
To me, like, the crazy thing is like the Wizard of Oz, and I know like you can't talk about one without the other, like I know they're not directly associated, but they are, you know. And The Wizard of Oz has such a brightness to it. Like, it is, you know, like, the transition from black and white in Kansas to into Oz, and, like, the color, and, like,
yeah.
And there was such a drained quality
yeah.
to the Wicked. It was my biggest take. I think we had talked about it when I had seen it. I was like, yeah. I couldn't get over how dark it was. And yeah. there were scenes where I genuinely couldn't tell. There, you know, I think for me the big standout of the movie is the dance sequence in the library.
Oh yeah.
And just like the practical sets they made, but it had like the most brightness to it. It's literally like in a windowed area, and all this light is coming in.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, this is the best because I can see what's going on. Like, everything feels tangible and less CG-ish. But
I'm trying to think of like a good way to like a good Marvel movie to like compare it to. But yeah, it. Like the castle and stuff like that. Like, when you look at it, and like the tunnels, like, it's I'm sure big portions of that are real.
Sure.
But there, it feels like there's so many like layers punching it up that you almost like lose that a little bit. Mm-hmm. I thought it was just like a little bit overdone.
It should have been a little more sharp. You know?
Yeah.
I think the colors were there, but the sharpness wasn't there.
Yeah. It took me out of it. But
yeah.
Anyway, that is definitely a nitpick. The songs are amazing. I think the performances are all good.
Mm-hmm.
Dinklage was a fun surprise. Like his character's fully CG, and like it thought it looked legit good.
Yeah.
Nothing real shattering, but it was like very good. Yeah. I don't have a ton to say. Like, but yeah, like I know for a fact that movie will be on again, and I will watch it.
Long as shit, though.
Huh?
Long as shit.
Yeah, incredibly long. Incredibly.
It's way too incredibly. Long.
Wait. Yeah. It's unbelievably long. And wild that it's only a part one. But, yeah. Maybe one last thing. Again, with Ariana Grande, super impressive that she was able to train her voice to do it in, like, that operatic way. You can't just be, like, a pop star and then be like, oh, I'll just sing a Broadway song at that level. Yeah. Like, that's not, like, an assumption, right? You don't just, like, take, I don't know, fucking Tate McRae and be like, hey, here's Wicked. Like, that, it doesn't really work that way, you know what I mean?
Ooh.
I think she's a pop star. She was just on SNL.
Oh, okay.
Or Charlie XCX or any of these forgettable people. Easy, everybody.
Easy.
But you know what I mean? Like, like, pop stars don't equal Broadway level talent. And like, listening to Ariana Grande sing that, I was like, she could easily do this. And she is.
You know, no surprise, her Marin interview was awesome.
I haven't listened to it yet.
They did kind of get into that of like, it was just so interesting to see, like, I love Marin, and you know, I love that he's a grump, but it was so interesting to see him like fawn over her. Like, he was such fan of her and like what she did in the movie, and like, you know, they kind of hinted at like, you know, she talked about it, she's wanted this role forever, and like, I kind of buy it, you know, like it's with her and Cynthia, that whole media tour, PR tour, it felt very like, I don't know. I don't even know how to put the right words into it. Like, not that it didn't feel genuine. It just, like, it was just, like, oozing, like, the PR machine.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
So, to see this, like, to hear this one-on-one interview, it was kind of apprehensive. And I do like her. I've liked her music for a long time. Genuinely. She's one of the few pop stars I actually listen to. I'll listen to her albums. but, like, it just, like, I was won over by the end. I was like, it's so weird that, like, I felt so defensive going into this. I'm like, oh, like, is this the PR thing? And then by the end, you're just like, oh, yeah, like, she's just, like, super humble and talented and... Yeah, typical her and Mark talking about death like 10 minutes into the interview.
Really?
Oh, yeah, they really got into it. It was a really good interview.
That's
yeah.
wild.
Yeah, he's so good, dude.
Yeah, I'll be jamming that again. God, I hesitate to even bring this up on this pod, but I will say, just like seeing her at the Oscars and everywhere, she might, that she's about a piece of paper. She is so small, and I don't think it was always that way. I'm not like on the, like, I know she's always been a petite person, but dude. Just seeing her on that PR tour you just referenced and at the award shows, I'm just like, what is going on? And I hope she's all right. I don't know. It's very random to throw in. But like, anytime I think of her, I think of like, I see this footage of her recently. I'm like, good Lord.
That's just the thing with people like in the public, in the media so much. Like you see them so often and you can just see the stages of it. I think that's just what is the jarring thing about
that
it.
That is
like,
the jarring part.
You compare it to a year ago and it's like, oh, that's a big... change from then to now, but
been in the public eye for so long, right? So when people, this happens to public figures, people notice, and then you know, and then it's more scrutiny, and I get it's not ideal, but okay, so we did Anora, Conclave, Wicked. Those are the Oscar movies I saw.
So what the only other Oscar movie I checked out was Nickel Boys. Heavy watch.
Yeah,
to say the least. I gotta say, I don't think I've ever seen a movie like this before. based on the camera work alone, the movie is 95% first-person POV.
I've heard
between
this,
between
yeah,
two characters, like a, back and forth.
Like chest-mounted camera rigs, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's very, like, very intimate, very close-in. I'll highly recommend it. You know, it's... It just follows, you eventually, the two come together, but it's about two boys who end up at this kind of, you know, it's set during, like, the 60s and, you know, the, in southern Florida, Tallahassee area, and, yeah. You know, one gets sent to, like, a reform school, you know.
You say it's in the 60s?
Roughly? In the 60s, okay, yeah. Because okay. It's around the time Martin Luther King, I believe he okay. was in the 60s, or early 70s, no, it's the 60s. And just by, you know, unfortunate events, he gets, you know, wrapped up in some, you know, it's some bullshit. So he ends up going to the school. He loses his opportunity to go to college, and he meets this other boy there, and just kind of the two of them, like the relationship they kindle and trying to make their way and grow. And there's like, you know, there's cut forwards in time, and they play around with time in a, not in like a
crazy way,
nothing but, crazy way, but like just kind of just the way they drop it in. Mm. It's like, oh, like, I guess like what the scene of just what happened and like the outcome of what that could have been. It's like, oh, right. But here he is in the future. So like they kind of, it's hard to explain, but just like what they do with time and then switching up the camera angles.
Yeah.
In different periods of time. I thought it was, again, very heavy watch, like almost 2.5 hour movie. I loved it.
I was going to say, is it long like everything else?
So. It is long, but, and I think just like the subject matter and not that it was dizzying, but just, I think, being in a POV for such a long period, sure. It is a little, I think it's just hard, like on the eyes.
The but, trailer yeah. made me a little nauseous. Like just, it looks intense.
There's like, not a spoiler, but like the opening scene is like, one of the main protagonists as like, probably like 3 to 4 age range. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of like really low shots. Mm. And there's a scene of, like, I think they're lying underneath the Christmas tree. And, like, you're looking up at the tinsel. And I legit got queasy. I was like, whoa, like, I really hope. I knew the movie was going to be, like, first person. I was like, I hope I'm not like this the whole time.
Yeah.
The second we got to, like, where the movie predominantly takes place, I was like, oh, okay, we're good.
Feels
like,
more natural.
Yeah, it felt very natural. But, right. Yeah, really, really, really good movie. I highly recommend it.
Really? Okay. Well, it's good to hear you say that because yeah. I, based off the trailer and knowing that they shot it this way, I was, like, really on the fence about it.
I think it's worth it. Just based like just the technique alone, and the story is so good okay. and very powerful. But you know the craft of it is just like it's sure. cool how they get these angles and different perspectives and getting, you know, like you see that in a movie like where it's like the same scene over, but they clearly had to reshoot it.
Yeah,
and there's a cool thing when they do where the perspective of one boy from the other of how they read a situation.
Oh, really?
The same words are being said. Like there's a scene where there's a bully at the table and he like barks like a dog at them, and you see the one guy the way he views of the scene, and then it cuts to the other guys like, you know, like 20 minutes later in the movie or 30 minutes later in the movie, and it's the same words being spoken, but it's just kind of like, you know, different body language of what sure. his assessment. It just I just thought that was so cool,
cool.
And very natural, and it's
like the
yeah
Luke Skywalker Kylo Ren thing.
Yeah,
kept fucking with it.
Just like that.
Okay, let's get here.
So I guess like just the last movie I checked out, it's a movie called Kneecap.
Okay,
it was recommended by the Big Picture crew. They were talking about it was on a lot of their top tens from last year.
Okay,
and one of the notes was Going Blind.
Okay,
so I did. I don't know if I want to like ruin it for here now, but I want to talk about it. It's a modern day story about these two young guys from Ireland, like in the north of Ireland.
Yeah.
And
sorry, I had to.
Yeah, I'm not even gonna attempt the accent. But anyway, so they meet this like by circumstance they meet this teacher, and they start, you know, he discovers their words, and like the whole movie's about preserving the like the Gaelic language, the Irish language.
Yeah.
And how it's like being kind of wheedled out of schools, and like people are fighting like the fight to keep it, you know,
yeah.
it's the people's language. And they started a hip hop group and a rap group.
Yeah.
And it's like very much like a drug culture movie. It's a very, very Gen Z, like modern day
okay.
movie. And I watched this whole movie blown away. Unreal soundtrack, just with the way they play with the visual effects and the music and like probably some of those wild, awesome party drug scenes I've seen in a movie ever. Like these guys are going for it.
You know what a great one is? Just by the way, that should be an Oscar category.
Sure. yeah.
Is it just, it's, sorry, just to not to derail you intentionally, yeah, but it's because you said it and it came to my mind immediately, is the Jeffrey scene from Get Him to the Greek.
Smoking I've the never, Jeffrey. I've never seen that movie.
Oh, God, I know what we're doing. okay. Get Him to the Greek. Next weekend we have together something, we'll spin that up. You haven't seen Get Him to the Greek?
No. No, I haven't.
Oh, my God.
It's, I was so Russell Brand, like, deterred for such a long time. No, it's not even have to worry about it because he's on everyone's shit list, but...
Yeah. Did he, too. Great performance in that movie, unfortunately. I hate that movie? Oh, he's great in it. I won't hear a damn word against it, all right? It's a good performance.
That's wild.
Yeah, all right. Anyway, so great party drug scene in Kneecap.
And anyways, like, just, you know, like, kind of the... And it's like, it feels very, like, the real world. They're, like, they're touching about, like, a lot of modern day stuff, that, like, what these people are, you know, these young people are dealing with.
Yeah.
And, street, like, youth. The street youth and the school system and the, you know, the politics of, like, you know, from the troubles in, like, in the 70s, 80s, and 90s. Like, they're still kind of relevant to today. And, you know, moving in, it kind of gets to the ending. There's highs and lows in the group and then all this and that. Dude, I'm just going to tell you. I apologize. Dude, this is a fucking music biopic. This is a real band. I was blown. Like, these guys are so talented. Like, they're such good rappers. Like, the beats are so great. And then I had no clue. I'm watching the credits and it's showing, like, this is them 2019, 2018, 2017, 2016. And, like, shows them, like, you know, it goes in reverse of, like, where they are now to, like, where they first started. And, like, it must, like, Dave, I was blown. And this is what I watched just before Conclave. And I was, like, jacked up the whole time. I was like, this movie rocks. It's like, boom, boom, boom. Just beating
Conclave almost doesn't have a soundtrack.
It was a halt. Dude, it was, like, inertia at its finest. It was just, like, smacking the wall. But, yeah, I highly recommend. I apologize about the spoiler, but, like, people need to check out. If you just want a good, fun Friday night movie, lots of comedy, a little bit of drama, the melding of the historical, like, the historical facts of, like, you know, that time and place, and just the lightness and the brevity. It was so good. I was...
Huh.
These 99 cent, like, I'm not trying to, like, you know, help Apple promote their 99 Friday cent rental movies there.
I was going,
like,
to say, where'd you watch it? But you got a little...
I check every week what the weekly 99 cent movie is, just to rent.
I never do that. That's a great idea.
And, you know,
is it,
like,
just one, or is it, like, a list?
There's a list, but they promote the, like, the bigger movie every week. Like, this week, or this past week, was Heretic with Hugh Grant, the horror movie. He just did A24. Yep. I picked that up. The week before was Kneecap, and I just, you know, I was like, I want to watch something tonight.
Nice, dude.
I fired up Kneecap, and I was just blown away.
Damn,
I've been listening to their tunes since. I was like, dude, this is nice. I can just go and listen to this band's discography. I thought this was just, like, a creation of someone's mind.
Yeah, and then you find out it's, like, a thing.
It's a full-blown biopic. The whole group is in the movie. Like, they were such good actors, so believable. Like, it just, like, the power of going in blind on something. You know, we always joke, Zero Dark Grand, and, like, just, like, no, go and experience it.
That's the move.
This was one of the ultimate boons of that philosophy.
Nice.
And just coming at the end of it, like, this is like awesome. Awesome.
That's pretty
awesome,
dope.
Awesome. Yeah.
Damn, Kneecap. Yeah. All right, Kneecap. Put it on your list.
Yeah, check it.
Jeez. I suggest... Okay, I'll leave this up to you. You want to do more, like, live-action drama a la White Lotus and Severance, or do you want to get into anime?
Let's break it up. Let's do a little bit of anime.
Okay, I'm just going to say this. I just want to quickly mention this part. Mm. Because I told you, I got stopped by TSA because I was repping Dragon Ball Daima, dude.
It's so funny.
On a Uniqlo shirt. And they were like, yo, what you think of Daima? And I was like, please.
You want to know?
And I was like, here's the podcast business card. Please check it out for my full thoughts. there's one episode left and I haven't seen it. So that's on me. But I believe it's done. I'm a week behind. So for all I know, there's a post credits and they say it's not. What do I know?
You know what we should do?
Go ahead.
Finish that episode. Next pod, we should get Bronson on here.
Sure.
Talk about some Daima.
There you go.
I know he's been really wanting to talk about it. So we should get
Bring
on.
It.
Yeah.
Bring it on, Bronson. But yeah, so I'm going to reserve really any major thoughts on the series, because I think, you know, last time we were here, I just kept saying the same stuff, right? It's sure. fantastic, it's great. Yep. They're doing some interesting stuff, so we'll do a full review.
I saw afterwards. The big review or big reveal last or a couple episodes ago.
Yeah, let's not even touch it yet.
No, I'm now very, like, the past like 3-4 weeks, the Daima agenda has been pushed on me. Like, yeah, really pushing people. Yeah, rewatch it before the finale. Crunchyroll sent me a message about that.
Really?
Yeah, rewatch all of Daima for the finale.
It's neat because 21 episodes. You know what I mean? Yeah.
And one, you know, Uniqlo, one afternoon. No.
Yeah, and Uniqlo did this little, you know, they did this Dragon Ball thing. So I got the Daima shirt, and then I got they had the OG Dragon Ball shirt. Yep. Had to cop that. So yeah, all right. So that's a little preview on Daima. How about Solo Leveling?
Check that shit right in my veins, dude.
Yeah, we're about three or four weeks. So we've had like...
We have three episodes left.
Yeah, no, I meant since we've talked. But
oh, sure. Yeah, yeah.
This is effectively, since we talked last, we've basically seen the
four episodes?
Yeah, and it's basically the 100 level dungeon arc. Yes. More or less, right?
Yeah, climbing the tower. Climbing the tower itself, the like announcement of him being an S rank.
Yep.
Now the Elixir of Life stuff.
So this is the most recent episode. Leveling episode 21. Spoiler warning.
Yeah.
So he gets. Episode 20. Let's do that first. Mm-hmm. He gets the final battle with these.
The demon.
Whatever. I'm just like him. I forget all their names, which is so funny, by the way. Yeah. Bernard, I think.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's
something. Oh, and like interesting. Like, I feel like there must be a reason they did this. Like, one of the demons in that world was sentient. It was a girl that he then used as a... You know, he got her to show him around to all the new levels. Do you remember that?
Yeah, but I think...
And she had a dad, and there was, like, an inner... You know what
I think the idea being that, like, the devil... Like, demons or devils are, like, on, like, in the system or whatever, on a more, like, elevated thing. But they've been teeing up him talking to demons, like, this season.
That's
so
true.
Far. So I think it's just the first time where he's like, let them live long enough to engage them.
Right. He befriended one.
Yeah.
And
it was pretty sad at the end of this most recent episode, though. Wow. The dungeon is now reset to its original settings. So he did all that work. He promised the family, you know, they're going to run the tower when he gets to the top. Like, he's like fully entrenched in the RP of it. Yeah. And then, you know, just, you know, kind of just leave
it. Did he connect those dots?
Honestly. Honestly, I think he just didn't even... Like, I think he missed that.
Yeah.
It's kind of the presentation of that scene.
Yeah.
He just immediately turned and walked away, and then the memo is there.
Yeah. That was my read of the situation, too. I was like, oh, wait, so is she going to die? Because he left her there.
I think she just goes back to before she met him.
Or, oh, yeah, no, it all... Yeah, it just resets, like you said. Interesting.
Yeah. It was a little sad. I was kind of like, damn, man.
Yeah. But the fight against Bernard was wild. The flying dragon
thing.
That was
so over the top. I like in the best way, like it felt like they hit us with like 10 impact frames in a span of 20 seconds. Just like,
ugh. Okay. Dude, I can't wait to rewatch this.
Yes. Yes.
This show or introduce it to someone who gets to binge season 1 and 2 back to back because
it doesn't stop.
We get fights every single episode. I remember we were talking about beginning of this season, like, oh, how long do you think they'll be in this snow space? And you're
moving.
They're going to be gone next week. And I was like, I don't know, man. Like, it feels like they're really teeing something up here. And then
it's been breakneck speed. Like, I know it's too early to have the conversation of like, oh, which season did you like more? But based on their skill and ability of pacing and editing alone this season, a full blown action scenes, high, like very high production value fights in almost every single episode.
Yeah.
Season 1 doesn't even come close. Genuinely. Yeah. Like, I think the work that season 1 did of like setting up the world and kind of slowly prodding along of like where the general direction is going to go, but like season 2, the fucking like the training wheels came off. Like it has been flying and I love it for that. Like it's you call it, you know, it's kind of like a caveman show. Like you know you're like turning your brain on. We've talked about this 100 times too, but like it's so satisfying. It's crunchy. It's fast. It's beautiful. Like it's
get hyped, dude. Just like fucking put your feet on the coffee table.
Yeah,
get a drink and just watch this shit and be like, holy shit! So and it's good. Big. I think it's doing very well too. Mm-hmm. So it's very cool to see it.
I read something. I should have had the article in front of me, but Crunchyroll finally put out their 2024 list.
Yes,
and I think the stat was it was like so far it was the fastest growing show in a single year. Yeah. I think some of their data points were in comparison to Demon Slayer, Attack on Titan, Kaiju number 8. So like it flew, like it's flying.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it's, I'm actually not looking forward to it being done. Like, it's, I know. It's,
would you say we got three episodes left?
Three left, yeah, because this was episode 9 of 12, so.
Yeah, okay. So we did mention episode 21. He does craft the Elixir of Life. He gives it to his mom. She wakes up. It appears like it worked. Yeah. I'm kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop on this one.
Maybe not. I think we're at that point in the show, because there's that scene of him sitting on the couch of, like, I should be... This is what I did this for. This is what I made the sacrifice for. Like, why do I feel like this? And then the second he gets a call about, hey, can you go kill some shit? He's like, sounds like a good experience.
Let's go.
It's like, you are such a Chad. I love it.
Yeah. So it's, I feel like, you know, maybe the fact that his mom is alive and he doesn't feel a ton, like, maybe we're going to start going down. I mean, I think we've discussed this, right? It feels like the long-term arc here is going to be like, what has this process done to his humanity or lack thereof?
Sure.
Is he the bad guy at the end? Like, what? How does it go? And also, like, you know, with the demon girl, like, we're getting a little bit, more than in season one, we're getting more and more about the system. How far reaching is it? Like, the demon girl kind of seemed to allude to the fact that, like, they were in their own kind of plane of existence, and then they were, like, ported to that dungeon.
And they even, there's a part two where, similar to the ice elf earlier in the season, where it got to the point where, like, it's like she's, like, scrubbed out. Yeah. But then there is like an audio note from the system itself saying, we've, like, it's like they said, like, we've given you
information.
More of additional information has been given. So the system is clearly choosing to withhold
it,
more. Yeah. It, like, it could let no more go, but
so yeah, I'm really fun plot. Like, I'm really digging the big theme and then all the stuff in between. I don't know. I like it. And then, okay, last thing is they get all these S ranks together. We're going to have a little training exercise. Yeah, and then lame. Do they preview, like there's maybe a level above S about, like, there's, like, a level where it takes an entire nation to stop them? Was that a post-credits?
I think it was just kind of, like, a tidbit thrown amongst, like, the collective, like, the powers to be. But
I wonder if, like, they're kind of in a way being like, Jinwoo is not yet top dog among the S ranks.
I think he's clearing everybody right now already.
Yeah, but I wonder if there's going to be more, because, like,
I think my whole read of this show is, like, he may or may not be the villain in the end.
Yes, right. Yeah,
but I do think, like, this, I think this is, like, the definitive power fantasy. I think this is going to continue to grow and grow and potentially be a problem. Because they are doing a really interesting... Maybe I'm reading into it too much, but, like, they are using this whole fire ant or ant...
Yeah.
Island, the Jeju Island stuff.
They've been moving that plot along nicely in the back.
Plotting. But I think now they're at the point where they are now introducing, I think, nation wars. And,
right.
Yes, they have them here to do the Jeju Island stuff. But I also think that's teeing up, like, Korea versus Japan versus America. Sure. Like, I think there is going to be, like, a power struggle of some sort. And where they, you know, they all come together to stop him or what. Or, you know, because there's all the stuff with his dad, too. But I did want to ask you, too, before we get past the Elixir of Life. Did the system... I should have went back and paused it. But did the system give him 6 Elixirs of Life?
That's what it looked like.
That seems pretty OP to me.
Yeah, like, 6 charges. I, like you, was probably assuming, like, you get 1 if you succeed, but maybe he got 6 doses. I don't know, but it looked like he got 6, yeah. And also, just to your last note, no sign of the dad whatsoever. I'm assuming we'll get another tease or we'll get something.
I bet you the stinger of the season finale is going to be his dad related, is my hunch.
Yeah. But yeah, it'd be weird if they did nothing. Okay, that's solo leveling.
I'm also behind on Sakamoto Days.
Yeah, okay. So we can catch up on Sakamoto Days later. I don't have a ton else anime-related, but I'm incredibly excited for White Lotus.
Shangri-La Frontier.
Oh, yeah, how's that going?
It's good. It's funny. It's there's a whole underwater, like, a reverse world thing going on, like an odd world situation.
Yeah.
He has, like, they have introduced, I don't know how far you are behind the season. But he's kind of like, he's got, like, was it the end of last season where he went into the mech game?
Yes, towards, actually, I don't know.
There's like a Gundam.
But I remember it clearly. So yeah.
He kind of has, like, like the old crew is not replaced, but he has like a new kind of like temporary, like new friends he's made, and they're all kind of, I really like the new cast they've introduced, like the other two players that he met in this other game.
New characters are fun.
And then more like in-game NPCs, and they've also like nothing, no one has like died or anything like that, but they've been really hitting home like every episode, twice an episode, that if an NPC dies in the game, they're gone.
Right. Okay.
And he, like, there's been a lot of worry, and like Emil, the rabbit, Emil, he keep referencing like, I need to keep her safe.
Right.
Because like she can go. And like, I think he's kind of at a point right now where he's definitely not out of his depth, but he's like, oh, this is like kind of like a high end situation.
Sure. Yeah.
And it's an interesting to see him as the character, you know, the in game and in real life being like, oh, I need to like watch out for Emil. Like, you know, we need to be careful. And I was like, oh, it's the little growth in the character like, and you can see him getting more and more into the game, and just, you know, the typical, like, not the stereotypes, but like just the situations you have in gaming that they bring to life in the show. It's just, it's so like, oh my God, like that's happened to me like 30 times before, you know. It's still really, really good.
I finished my first campaign on Baldur's Gate 3.
So happy
going again immediately.
You're going again, right into it.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It's one of the best gaming experiences I've ever had. It's unbelievable. Mm.
I've been playing Avowed, which is very like, you know, fantasy, like,
yeah,
first person game, but I'm enjoying it so much. I'm thinking back to Baldur's Gate, and I know you've been talking about Baldur's Gate a lot. So I think this year alone, I would definitely like to do a replay.
I'll go anytime if you want to start a little campaign sizzle. Because, that game is just unbelievable. But, I only brought it up because of SLF, mm-hmm. Shangri-La, and all that stuff. You're right. It's very true to form, true to life.
Mm-hmm.
White Lotus?
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
White Lotus Season 3. I don't think we've talked about it, have we?
No, we have not had the chance.
Okay, so we're 3 episodes in at the time of, three episodes have aired at the time of this recording.
And correct.
We're going to talk about all 3. You're caught up?
Yeah, I'm caught up.
Okay, so there's your spoiler warning. Does it feel like a bigger cast, as in like slightly more higher profile ensemble?
Slightly more high profile. Like,
let me put it this way: in seasons 1 and 2, other than Jennifer Coolidge, sure, I don't know if I recognized a single actor.
Steve Zahn is pretty known.
Which one is he?
First season, he was the dad of what's her name's there? Everyone's girlfriends hate. And wives hate. Oh my God, what's her name there? The blonde girl.
Yeah.
She sells shampoo now.
We're gonna be here all night. I have no idea. Between our pop culture knowledge, I have no idea. But to your point, fair enough. But what my point, I guess, was I recognize like a lot of people in season 3.
Sure. Yeah. I would say like Carrie Coon's pretty big. And,
Carrie Coon. Schwarzenegger.
Wow, what a performance that guy's putting on. I feel so gross every time he's on screen.
He's gross. The girl group of 3, like the middle-aged three ladies.
Carrie Coon, Leslie Bibb, Michelle Monaghan.
Yeah, and what
Lucius Malfoy.
Lucius Malfoy's. Oh, and the guy who's done the 2 Tarantino movies.
Walton Goggins? Yeah,
like, boy. You see what I'm saying? Like, we just named the whole cast.
Yeah.
Anyway, that was just my point. I fucking love Walton Goggins.
I do. Man. Did you see like the Variety photos making the rounds right now?
No.
Just like mid-50s, just absolute like TRT stud.
Let's go.
Leanna showed me the photo. She goes, "Is this your guy?" I'm like, "God damn right, that's my guy." I was like, "Check that shit out." She's like, "Wow, I love Walton Goggins." I'm like, "I bet that body is like Greek as fuck." I'm like,
good for
him, marble.
Dude.
Yeah,
good for
him. I'll send you those photos later. It's incredible. But
that's awesome.
Also, dude, okay, I've been wanting. You're the only other person I know that's watched Zone of Interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fabian, dude.
Sam sent me that, and I was like, no.
Talk about... I've been wanting to have this conversation with you, like, since it clicked for me. I have, like... I respect actors and all that, but, like, just how broad the spectrum can be. Like, the definition of night and day. Like, he's not doing too much in White Lotus yet, or whatever. Like, he's around.
And I hope he's there for a reason.
Very much comic relief. He must be. But, like, it just goes to show that who directs you, the tone of the movie, the writing of a movie versus, like, something else. I understand what people call them, like, chameleons and this and that. But, like, it is just crazy how much a haircut and a smile, you know, can, like, completely change.
Energy.
I was just like, wow, that's wild.
Yeah.
Wild, wild, wild. But
yeah, he's unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like for that movie and for taking this role, I hope they give him something good to chew on. But I don't even know where to start, man. I really like the season. Episode 3 was maybe the slowest so far. I thought like nothing. That's not a criticism, but just it felt like the least amount of stuff happened. But
yeah.
But White Lotus is kind of like this, right? It's build, build, build until you're like, okay, we're bursting at the seams.
I would say, like, I had a similar thought where maybe it's not like a perfect kind of comparison, but episode 3 felt like a immediate continuation of all the themes and conversations in episode 2.
Yeah.
Like, it just felt like a continuation of those conversations that everyone had with their respective groups. Whereas, like, the propulsion from 1 to 2, like, it felt like there was new things being brought up.
Yeah.
Versus where it kind of felt like the same conversations or the continuation, immediate continuation of them. It feels fresh and like good. Like it's like, oh, this is a great episode or whatever. But, I know what you mean. It kind of felt like we watched episode 2 again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I think they're keeping the strength of like all of the sources of tension.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Like the politics stuff came up between the three women. That was
Are we really going to talk about Trent?
That was good.
That's a recurring theme all three seasons, though.
Yeah,
yeah.
The dad getting Tim. I think it's Lucius Malfoy's character starting to hit the pills a little bit. Walton Goggins fucking being awesome, smoking weed, letting out snakes.
You get
late. And his girlfriend gets bit. And also the way he talks to her is just like, wow.
Yeah, crazy.
And then I think like maybe like the only thing majorly nefarious going on, you know, there's like these sketchy bodyguards that may or may not have organized that inside job.
Feels like an inside job, yeah.
Yeah, feels like an inside job, yeah. And what else? Oh, fucking Greg/Gary shit. That guy, like, he's there for a reason.
Yep.
And I'm curious to see what happens. His girlfriend, I think, yeah. Her and Schwarzenegger will probably get something going.
Yeah.
They had some looks.
I gotta say, like, not to not point any fingers at our Quebecois brothers there, but the second it was revealed that, like, she's like, when she got all upset, like, I'm not French, I'm Canadian. And, like, not to, like, stereotype there, but it was like, oh, wow. This is, like, the closest the show has ever felt to my world.
I know, it was very
jarring of, like, whoa.
I know. I laughed. Yeah. I laughed at when that happened.
Yeah. We've all known men and women like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We should address the incest elephant in the room.
A lot of incest.
Incest vibes. It's not just us, right? There's headlines being written about this. It's like very much part of the discourse. This is the weird sexual awkwardness between the children, Tim's children.
All specifically, three of them, too, yeah.
Yeah, Schwarzenegger the most.
Yeah.
Patrick? Is it Patrick Schwarzenegger?
Patrick, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you know, by the way, he's in Gen Z, the Boys spinoff. Because he auditioned but didn't get.
Oh, he is.
Yeah. But did you know he auditioned, and you can kind of see it, for the Homelander role?
Way too young.
No, I mean, he would have been, especially back then. He wouldn't have been too young, and his face is made. Anthony Starr is made for that role.
Sure, yeah.
But you can kind of see, and he auditioned but didn't get anything back.
Golden Boy vibe. I think it's the Golden Boy vibe.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. And he auditioned for Superman as well, but didn't get it. Yeah. Anyway.
Not Golden Boy enough.
Ain't a golden boy enough.
See, well, it's hard to be an actor, but
so I think some of the theories I'm seeing out there, like, you know, maybe one of them is adopted or something. I don't know, but we're tugging at that loose thread, and we're gonna find out. I like guaranteed they're doing some weird shit.
Yeah,
and I'm sickly interested. Like,
yeah, it's so funny because we were talking, Leanne and I were talking about it. And, you know, like, just, we're deep in the subreddit there. And, you know, a lot of the general consensus is that he might have sexually assaulted the sister.
Oh.
Or the regard, and, like, you know, like, it's why, like, there's such antagonism. And, you know, to me, I was like, I think he was assaulted. And I think that's why there's a lot of this.
I actually kind of agree. I think,
you know,
he might be the victim, and, you know, not the victim.
To a certain, yeah. But,
Fucked up.
It's so funny because he makes me feel so icky and gross every time he opens his mouth, and I'm like, just go again, the writing and the, you know, just kind of putting it all together. But
that's why I said the Homelander. He's gross, or makes me feel uncomfortable.
I think he is perfect for that universe. The character, again, that's a tough one to pull off. But again, sure. Anthony Starr is that character. It's incredible. But no, he has a line in I think the second or first or second episode of, I don't do drugs there. And then, you know, like, I'm just like you, Dad. I don't do drugs. And then, like, you take like Adderall all day long. He's like, because I need to get shit done. Like, just like the, I don't know. His delivery has been very funny.
I agree. The awkward kid, the awkward younger brother. Yeah. That's gonna go somewhere.
Yeah.
The sister there, she visited the monk monastery. She's got an appointment booked.
And in I found
weird vibes over there.
Weird vibes. I found it so interesting too, because she was just like, they hit up the line of her being unprepared and her ducks in a row, and that entire conversation is a lot of presumption on her part of like, oh well, like I talked to him, you know, so like when is the interview? And like it's just there's. It just goes to show, like, they're not, like, they're all shitty.
Yeah.
know? I'm worried about my girl, Belinda.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, Leanne and I were talking, and she was like, you know, like, she had it, like, really shitty in season one. She got played around and messed with, and she's here having the time of her life. And, like, I'm like, I think you're right. I don't think it's good and good for her. But I think of the cast, makes me the most uncomfortable and anxious is the three women. Like, every time it's the three of them on screen, I'm just like, ooh, I don't like this. Like, this is so uncomfortable.
They're fun because I agree with your, like, they make me uncomfortable. But, like, you know, this is, like, the fun part of White Lotus is, like, looking at these groups of people and wondering which of these situations could get so bad that someone dies, right? Mm. That's like the fun part or the weird, or, you know, how could this get so out of control that something truly drastic happens? And in season one, you're like, oh, I could maybe see this, you know? With them, I can definitely see it getting ugly. I can definitely see it. They have too much to drink.
Yeah. You
know, every time one girl goes to bed, the other two stay up and talk shit, right?
Yeah, so far, we have the trifecta now. We've had all parties have had their moment on the triangle.
One. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking about real life. This is White Lotus.
Yeah.
No, but I can see this getting ugly, but could one of them really die? I don't know.
What? You don't subscribe to the monkeys getting their hands on a handgun?
Maybe. I think the current leading theory is Tim, the dad, whatever work shit he's in might come a knocking. Or the Walton Goggins, the Walton Goggins and Gary shit, like they're clearly into something sketchy.
I think the biggest the biggest red herring is Walton Goggins.
Absolutely could be. Oh, but then again, the inside job thing, like those guys could maybe get crazy. I don't know. There's enough.
I think Guy Talk's gonna go fucking John Wick and like take matter into his own hands. He's gonna drop all those guys.
That'd be awesome.
Just go like Rambo into the jungle and just go buck wild on them.
Sick.
I also think he's not gonna have a very good performance or end result in this season. God. And Mook, Mook performed at the Oscars?
Yeah.
I thought that was cool. Like I knew Leanna's like, oh yeah, she's in Blackpink. I'm like, what?
I forget. Yeah, Sam told me that. I forgot about it. Kind of neat.
Close
here.
But dude, this show is just
fucking love the show. Yeah.
The vibes, man. Like it's just it hits the spectrum of, you know, uncomfortability and you know the lavish nature of like these resorts and you know like I've been thinking about a water hammock since I saw it. Like I need one of those in my life.
That's funny.
It's so funny like. The there's kind of like a warmness and wholeness, like a wholesomeness this season. More like it feels slightly less cynical for certain characters, like you know, like take this like the Walton Goggins and the therapist stuff. I find that easily could have been like them attacking you know therapy and psychology and
for sure.
You know, psychiatry, but like it feels so genuine and like something is like she feels like a real person like trying to unpack clear trauma and he's fighting it. Like, they easily could have, like, played into the, like, you know, I think they touched that more with Parker Posey getting the, like, her having to take a fucking Xanax for the massage is one of the funniest things.
I love that.
I was like, let's not think, let's sleep through the whole thing.
But that massage, the therapist, like, she touched a nerve. He, he was so discombobulated, he had to leave town and go get fucked up because of her asking him a couple of real questions.
Smoked laced pot, release a cobra into the wild. I was very uncomfortable. A cobra
that immediately bites his girlfriend.
Yeah. I heard telling me that. I was like, never in a million years would I even be in a building with snakes.
I know.
Like, that's so crazy.
Oh, there's a snake show. Oh, good. Yeah. So we can leave town.
Yeah. We're going home. Sweet. Yeah.
Okay. Severance. So,
okay.
You're not caught up.
I for sure slept through the second to last episode, and I have not seen the most recent one.
Oh, wow. So you're a little ways behind. Okay.
Yeah.
So,
I was talking big shit too. To Lena. I was like, no, I'm not falling asleep. I'm awake. I'm like,
no, it's all good. Fuck, man. It's tough to review Severance without going like ultra deep. So I think the only other way to do it is we'll go ultra light on this review.
Sure.
Grant's up to episode. You'd be up to episode 5 then. Episode 7 has aired.
Yeah. Yeah.
So by the time you listen to this, episode 7 will still be the most recent episode. But we'll be back before the finale.
Yes. Is it 8 or 10 episodes?
10. So we'll be back in time to talk about 9. So we'll be back to talk right before, we'll theory craft right before episode 10.
Oh, that's a good idea. I like that.
Yeah. But I will say this though, Grant, this is not a spoiler whatsoever. And for everybody listening, episode 7 of the series is one of my favorite yet. It answers a ton. Episode 7 of season 2, the one that just aired, is one of my favorite of the series so far. And one of the coolest things, it answers tons of questions, but the coolest thing I saw afterwards is this was the directorial debut of the person who directed it. And her name is Jessica Lee Gagné, and she's a cinematographer on the show. And it was the first one she's ever directed. Wow. And it's like a very...
mind-bendy or like kind of straight lace episode?
Mind-bendy, I would say. More on the artistic side for sure. And
cool.
And like lore heavy, like exposition stuff. Nice. Like, it's a big one.
Hmm.
There's a bunch of really cool stuff in that episode that we'll get to. But I don't think there's like a ton more that we can really say. There's like a lot of theories out there. I'm trying to think if I can really mention anything without spoiling anything from the recent episodes, and I don't think I can. So I'll just say I'm fucking loving it.
Oh, yeah, I am very much loving it. Yeah.
God, I love Adam Scott.
He is. It's so funny because he's one of those guys, like, he was a comedy guy for me for so long.
Yeah.
You know, and like, it's kind of like a Jim Carrey thing. I remember the first time I watched like Eternal Sunshine.
Yeah.
And I was just like,
you know what?
Cooking.
There's one thing I could say for episode 5, which would have been the last one you saw in full.
The Trojan's Horse, I think the episode's
Yeah.
Called. Yeah.
In it, Milchek's performance review. Do you remember that?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a great scene.
Three minor.
Yes. Yeah. So in that, they say the completion of Cold Harbor will be historically significant.
Mm.
And this, like, you know, spurred more theories and all that. But, you know, we think Cold Harbor has something to do with Gemma. I think, and this reveals, does it reveal anything? Fuck. I don't know. I'm not going to say anything. Just to
do it. On
the safe side. I think when you think back to, do you remember the pregnancy lady who might have been severed for the process of pregnancy?
Yes.
I think this ties somehow to that. I think we're thinking of severing just like negativity in a, like, at a larger scale. I don't know how that connects to Gemma. But I think that I think they're refining the severance process. Like, I think there's more to do there. Especially the pregnancy thing is a big, big, big one, right?
Sure.
Because, like, if you can sever yourself for pregnancy, like, the next, not pregnancy, the for birth, the very bad part, right? Or the very tough part. I won't say bad. Sure. The challenging part. Mm-hmm. Like, then your next question would be like, well, what else can I sever myself from?
Sure.
Right, and I don't...
A performance review?
Yeah. I can't quite tie that back to... Like, I think that the big piece everybody's really still missing, and I won't comment on whether or not this is clarified in the next few episodes or not. But what I... Like, as of at least episode 5, and maybe more, like, one thing that is not clear is how do
clickety clacks on the keyboard relate to, like, what the fact that they're refining data, how does that actually translate to anything actually being done?
Sure.
RE Severance. How does that impact Gemma? If Gemma is the Cold Harbor project, how does this work relate to whatever the hell she's experiencing, right? Like, that part, unclear. We're refining data.
Okay, so let's work with this. If that is your theory.
Yeah.
And your belief has to do with negative thought or...
Negative experience.
What if all the data they're being given is, like, brainwaves?
Yeah.
There's a ping, and they're pulling that away. Yeah. You know? Like, that's the data they're refining and pulling, whatever.
But. Yeah. But, so... I'm with you on that. Like, I think, like, could you, like, take brain data or soul data or just literal, like, waves and then, like, somehow, like, convert it to, like, a binary string or just a string of numbers and letters or whatever it is?
Yeah.
That makes sense. But how do the refiners, what process are they doing to refine that data? Like, how, like, do you remember, like, the Dylan demo in episode or in season one where he tells... Helly, like, oh, like, it's going to feel like a scary number.
Mm.
Do you remember that? And then she does her first click, and it works.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck is that about? Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, and also, like, to the, like, is there something inherent about them being severed that allows them to refine that data? Does the severed process not matter at all? Remember we talked about, like, does Mark's relationship with Gemma.
Could be experience too, like just lack of like experience, you know, like almost like more of a even keeled in ego, like you know, it's
does Mark's experience knowing Gemma help decode her brain data better, even though it's severed Mark?
Yeah,
like I don't like that still to me is
the thing too, like it just my question I've had is because there's been a lot of talk in the show about like how important Mark S is,
yeah,
and you know his work is crucial. But, like, up until, like, you know, what is it, like, a span of maybe, like, a month, or, like, let's just say 6 months, was it Eddie, or who was the guy that Mark replaced? He was their former, like, team lead. The guy that dies. Petey. Like, so, what changed between Petey running the show and Mark being, like, essential to being the team lead and, like, getting the work done? Unless he was just, you know.
Or was he always a high-value employee for whatever reason?
Sure, yeah.
But
they do put they press a lot of importance of Dylan and his talent and his work as well. So like, it kind of feels like,
well,
you know,
yeah, this goes back to my Neon Genesis theory for the record.
Okay.
Like, do you remember that?
Yeah.
It's just like, okay, so Mark S is important. We all acknowledge this, right?
Mm-hmm.
But like, why have any other refiners? Like, there must, and we know that they refine stuff. Like, we know they've closed files.
And there are other refiners at other plants.
So, yeah. Like, what does this, I just don't know what this means. Are they all decoding brain data from, like, people they know that have died in weird ways?
Or just the coincidence that Coal Harbor itself has just been the biggest leap in whatever they're working on.
Biggest,
you know, they hit lightning in a bottle, I guess. But
could be that, too. But it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Dylan, yeah, I love all these characters, man. They're all so fantastic. Yeah. It does feel like, I mean, their direct competition come Emmy season, I assume, will be White Lotus.
Not even in the same category, though.
Drama, no?
No, White Lotus is cool comedy.
Have they historically gone comedy?
Ooh, you know what? That might be worth looking into. I'm not sure.
Do it.
Emmy noms.
And then we can wrap it up.
Okay, tell me the... All right, so we got... Jesus.
Oh, dude. By the way, while you look this up... Yeah. Okay, I saw this. This is like a gossip headline, but imagine...
Yeah.
Imagine if this happens. Just this is somewhat Severance adjacent.
Yeah.
You remember the guy who was going to play Kang the Conqueror and then lost the job?
Oh, yeah.
Jonathan Majors?
Jonathan Majors, yeah.
I read, you know, a headline... Severance character being eyed by Marvel for Kang the Conqueror recast. And then I click in and they go, the word is Tremel Tillman being looked at closely, because like they probably don't want to throw out that whole plot line, right?
No.
They presumably spent a lot like teeing up Kang. Yep. And then Jonathan Majors has this scandal and they got to throw it all out the window. Just recast him with a...
he's so good in this. Like,
Travell Tillman's unbelievable in Severance.
I think Adam Scott is like, you know, on a fucking hot one there.
Yeah, yeah. He's doing work of a career.
But Milchick's actor again is like,
yeah,
he's on screen. I'm feeling it. So you are correct. They were nominated the years that they aired. They were nominated for drama series.
Yeah.
And anthology series.
Right. That makes sense. Anyway.
Man, double dip.
Yeah, but they are like really... Severance is like really operating on an extremely high level. So is White Lotus. So it's a really fun time for this stuff to be on TV.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I think that's all I got, homie.
That's all I got.
Okay, cool. Thank you guys so much for listening. Sorry we were late. We'll be back in a couple of weeks. I think so, right? Grant, I won't be traveling. And then Grant,
should be good.
We got to talk about this late off mic because I'm going to be over in Nippon for a little while. So and then excited. We're going to have to figure out if we get temp hosts, we take a little hiatus. I don't know. We're going to figure it out. Nobody worry. Thank you for listening. Subscribe to the podcast on YouTube, Apple Music, Spotify. I mean, let's be real. Most of you are likely on Spotify. But also, we've been on a little tear here over here on TikTok and Instagram. We're putting out content like crazy. So at Part-Time Otaku Podcast, follow us on all those platforms. Subscribe to the show where you get your podcasts. We'll be back in a couple weeks. Thank you very much for listening. That is all. Grant, go ahead and continue.
Bye, guys.